Harlequin Audio is proud to bring you Daughters Unto Devils by Amy Lukovics, performed by Georgina Marie. For my Edmund, a star shines on the hour of our meeting. 1. The first time I lay with the postboy was on a Sunday, and I broke 3 commandments to do it. Honor thy father and thy mother, thou shalt not lie, and remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Why couldn't I stop counting all my sins? It was as if I was craving the wrath that was to follow them, challenging it, if only to make certain that I was indeed alive. There used to be a time that I would have feared the consequences of acting out in such a way against the Lord, but not anymore. Not after last winter. Not after being trapped in the cabin for months and losing my mind and seeing the devil in the woods. Clearly, the Lord had forgotten all about me, and therefore I would no longer be following his rules. When I die, I will see hell, I whispered after we were through with our sins of the flesh. But the postboy did not hear me over the sound of the water from the creek. Devil has claimed me already. I wished that the boy would turn over so I could study his face. I didn't know it very well yet. Wasn't even sure if his eyes were brown or blue, to be honest, but I wanted that to change. This boy had saved me from my hell on earth with the wonderful distraction that was his body. I should have known his name. Henry, I remembered. His name is Henry. I asked him in a louder voice if he'd be coming back again to see me after today. He said he would. Good. I sighed and ran my fingers slowly down his spine. Because if you didn't, I would be cross with you. He turned over then, not to kiss me like I hoped, but to contemplate me with genuine curiosity. His dark eyebrows furrowed. I noted that his eyes were green, like lucky clover, that his nose was attractively askew. You're strange, he said after the silence became uncomfortable. What's different about you? I was chilled at the question. Too many things, Henry, I thought. This is only the second time we've ever met. Still, the question awakened the memories of last winter unmercifully, the ones that were too painful to bear, the ones that ended up causing all 16 years of my life to slip away from me like water through open fingers. The screaming. Oh, all that screaming. And the claws, and the bloody footprints in the snow. And the devil who knew my sins. I noticed that Henry was still watching me in silence, waiting for my answer. What's different about you, Amanda Verner? It would be a lie to claim that the question didn't irritate me. I was here for good feelings in abundance and good feelings only. I pulled my frown into a shy grin. I think I've already answered that question for you, have I not?
Oh, yes.
He smiled and kissed my fingertips.
I suppose that you have. The 4-hour ride to get here was more than worth it, I would say. I hope you don't think less of me, pursuing your body with such haste.
Of course not. I cut him off with a kiss. I know it is sinful.
but it also feels necessary. How can that be? And it was true. Already I found myself wanting to be with him again, my flame in the dark, my rescuer.
I understand exactly what you mean.
Henry's hand slid down my side, and I forgot all about the devil in the woods, as well as the secret that made him come for me in the first place. I wonder how I went so long making deliveries to Crispin's Peak, never suspecting that the lady of my dreams lived right on the other side of the mountain. I didn't like to imagine Henry leaving the mountain to deliver post to other settlements. The idea of not having a reason to steal away from the cabin and my family whenever the tension became unbearable was troubling. But Henry insisted that he wouldn't stay away long.
"I'll come back as often as my schedule allows it," he promised.
"Worry not, sweetling." After Henry's trousers were back on and he was riding away on his horse, General, toward the trail that would eventually lead back to the settlement, I walked home through the trees, pulling pine needles from my hair and securing the buttons at the neck of my dress with fumbling fingers. At the sight of the cabin, I became overcome with a most indecent bloom of shame. The shame of sacrificing my body and liking it. Really liking it. Did it mean I had no conscience? Pa would have certainly thought so. Ever since I could remember, he'd ingrained in us the knowledge that to betray our Lord was to betray ourselves, our souls. A woman's body was to be for her husband only, and anything less would result in the Lord's profound disappointment and, by extension, the dismissal of the daughter from the family. I wondered if Pa would really cast me out if he discovered what I had just done with Henry. Part of me believed he would, but it was hard to say. I wished I could ask my sister Emily. Emily is my dearest friend, after all. I do tell her everything. But I haven't told her about Henry. She doesn't even know that he exists. She doesn't even know that he exists, and I've lain naked with him in the woods not once, not twice, but 8 times now. And it's because of this that I think I must have truly lost my mind, because after witnessing the birth of my youngest sister Hannah, I wouldn't wish pregnancy or childbirth on even my worst enemy. Hannah. On more occasions than I care to admit, my mind creeps to a dark, spider-webbed place, where my new baby sister is the reason I've turned into such a soulless liar. Because sometimes in the blackest depths of the night, I pray for something bad to happen to Hannah. Sickness, maybe, or a quick accident during her bath. The horrible thoughts pain me, cause me to sob quietly into my pillow. But I become temporarily numbed from the evil as I think about my Ma and how much she has changed since the winter and the sickness and the birth. How much we all have. The woman who wove grass halos for Emily and me when we were children is long gone, a slave to the unconditional love she has for her poor, helpless baby, born deaf and blind and full of confused rage as a result of it all. Ma's worry for Hannah never ceases, never slows, constantly showing itself through dark circles under her eyes and a newly formed hunch in her stature that wasn't there before last winter. Could it be I who is responsible for those circles? I who have pulled her shoulders down with the weight of the entire world? I cannot bear the thought. No, it must be the baby, the ever-wailing baby who screams with such tremendous, earned rage. Surely if the baby hadn't survived the birth, things wouldn't be as dire as they are now, as positively changed. So I bring myself to pray for Hannah's death, beg, really, and am afterward reduced to a shriveling shell of a girl with no soul and a craving for the odd postboy who likes having his parts tugged. Of course, after the tears dry up and I'm left hiccuping in bed, I realize that what I'm doing is despicable and morbid and wrong. The Lord would hate me for wishing death upon one of his creations, but by now, I am quite certain that the Lord hates me anyway. Sinner. My wish for Hannah is my darkest secret, the one that called the devil upon me, the one that will be my undoing. When I remember this, the tears usually start again, this time rolling down a face that burns with regret and shame. Shame, the constant. Shame, the stain on my soul that can never be washed away. I heard once that long-term isolation can have an effect most wicked on even the most competent of minds and seasoned mountain men, and also that guilt on its own is capable of ruin. By the time I met Henry, the postboy in Crispin's Peak, while I was in for supplies with my pa, I'd experienced both, and my mind was eaten with rot. I believe a part of myself may have died last winter. 2. Sometimes I believe the baby will never stop crying. How scared she must be. Or angry. Or both. Ma often wonders aloud if it's possible she's in any sort of pain, cursing the absence of a real doctor on the mountain. Pa gets upset if anyone makes such remarks in front of him, and tells us that it's a sign of an unsympathetic heart. Emily watches from the outside, observant as always, a frown painting her face with unease at the sight of our parents quarreling. After Hannah finally quiets down for the night and the cabin is saturated in shadow, Emily gets up in the dark from the goose feather mattress on the floor that we share with our younger siblings Joanna and Charles. She walks on soft toes to my side of the bed and crawls in next to me without a word, then waits a few moments to make sure she hasn't awakened anybody before asking in a hushed whisper if everything is well with me.
"Why must you keep asking me that?" I whisper louder than I should, exhaling my irritation. "You've been so quiet lately," she insists.
Pa's snore is cut through the cramped blackness of the cabin.
"I know that something is happening in your head. Why won't you tell me?"
I want to, more than anything. But I cannot. I can hardly even admit what I've done to myself, even though my bleeding cycle has been missed many times, and my breasts ache like never before, and I feel horribly nauseous every single morning, and sometimes late at night, just like Ma was when she first suspected she was with child with all of my siblings. It shouldn't have come to this, but there is no way to avoid it, not after the secret get-togethers in the woods behind my family's cabin, not after the hidden flowers and candies started showing up in the bushes by our meeting place, not after the kisses where Henry's tongue was in my mouth and his hands were pressing my body against his, like if he didn't have me soon, he'd absolutely die. Desire rules all, for better or for worse. I was doomed from day one. And now I'm to be a mother, when I do not even believe that having children is smart, or favorable, or lovely. More mouths to feed, more people to keep alive, more chances for disease and pain and grief. In the end, it is hard to think that it could ever be worth it. All those years, all that unnecessary pain. I search for Emily's eyes through the dark. "Everything is well, sister," I lie. After her frustrated sigh causes Ma to stir, my sister reluctantly turns over and falls asleep against her better judgment, I'm sure. Soon she is snoring softly, completely unaware that I am biting the corner of my pillow and curling my toes into the bottoms of my feet to keep from screaming. Secret is not something that belongs in Emily's or my vocabulary. Then again, neither is anything about lying, or being with child at 16 years old when I have no husband to claim the infant as his. I promised after last winter that I would never lie to her again, and here I am, betraying her trust. When she finds out about the baby, the brittle bone of that trust will shatter, impossible to fix, impossible to reverse. Besides Emily, I also have the reactions of my parents to fear. Ma will weep, undoubtedly, too overcome with disappointment to function. Pa will call me a whore. He'll call me a sinner. He'll throw me out on my own as proof that my misgivings will not bring down his own faith. One bad apple could spoil the entire barrel. Unsympathetic hearts, indeed. I might as well be dead. But what if I run away with Henry and they never have to find out? My toes curl in the dark even harder. If I disappear, my family would probably assume that I was attacked by one of the many bears or wolves that roam the mountainside where our cabin sits, that I was ripped up and fed to a pack of hungry cubs in the name of the Lord. They would be taken with sorrow over the loss, yes, but they would move forward eventually, especially knowing that I was with our Heavenly Father and waiting for them to join me. They'd never know the truth. Not until they died and ascended into their eternal kingdom and noticed that I was still missing. I must take control of my fate. Tomorrow is the first of the new month, and Henry will surely show up for a secret visit. So tomorrow, I will tell Henry about the baby. If he really loves me, as he's claimed breathlessly over and again during our nude entanglements in the forest, he should be happy. Maybe even more encouraged to bring me home with him this time. With the resolution bound in my mind, I begin to cry into the pillow that I am still biting on as if my life depends on it. I will never see my dearest friend again. I imagine Emily alone with Joanna and Charles and Hannah. I imagine her taking a walk through the misty woods after finding out that I have gone missing, just so that she can cry and curse privately over her loss. And my heart aches unbearably. This is when I identify the part of my resolution that I could never follow through with, and I adjust the plan accordingly by swearing to myself that I will come back for Emily after the baby is born, and I am married and can offer her some place to live, along with a proper explanation of why exactly I had to do this. I had to go away. I imagine myself telling her in the future, "You know why." And that is how I make myself comfortable with it. That is how I stop the tears and cool my face of its shame and uncertainty. I stop biting my pillow and lie on my back and fall asleep to the sound of Pa's serrated snores, for what may very well be the last time. Emily sighs beside me and pushes her ice-cold feet against my calves to warm them. I will miss her so much. I dream about darkness and punishment and something that is squirming inside of me, writhing, growing bigger and stronger with every cursed, miserable heartbeat. Emily asks me what's wrong again the next morning, this time with more urgency. "You know I'll find out eventually," she challenges with a forced smile. "I am your sister. It's part of me to know when something is wrong with you." She molds small disks of cornmeal batter with her hands and places the cakes on the large skillet that is already sizzling with strips of boar bacon, still fresh from Pa's catch yesterday evening. The fragrance of breakfast and the black coffee bubbling over the fire just outside the cabin is wonderful in the early morning of these woods, before the baby is awake and screaming, and reacting violently to anybody who attempts to touch her, except for Ma. A family of deer graze around the trees nearby, slurping up the cold, dew-soaked grass that blankets most of the mountainside. I turn the hot, spitting meat strips with caution while I try to think of what to say to Emily.
If you'll find out eventually, I tease, no longer able to keep up with the nothings, then I might as well wait until you do. Oh, please! Emily pinches me playfully on the elbow. Just skip to it. Emily deserves everything and more for still treating me like me, no matter what. Even after I broke down to her about the truth of what happened to me in the cabin when Hannah was born. She promised to take my secret to the grave, but still I found that everybody else in the family was different around me once the winter was gone. They were hesitant, cautious, almost as if they were afraid. Joanna and Charles started to prefer Emily to oversee their games instead of me, although I suppose I couldn't blame them for it. I would be afraid of me, too. It's nothing, sister, I insist, willing her to just believe me and move on from it. Truly. A wave of nausea overcomes me, and suddenly the smell of food is too much to bear. I place my sleeve over my face and feign a cough so that Emily thinks it's just the smoke from the fire. You're acting very curiously, she observes as I take small gulps of the fresh morning air to fight the roiling in my gut. You almost look ill or something. I am just fine. It comes out with far more bite than I intend. You do not need to worry about me, Emily. I manage not to retch up any bile, and before I know it, the moment of sickness has passed. I load a plate for Pa and try to ignore how my sister watches me from the corner of my eye. Joanna and Charles ask me to take them into the forest while Hannah naps, she says, and clearly this means she has given up on pestering me for now, for which I am relieved. I'd ask you to come along, but something tells me that this is going to be one of those days where you disappear into the woods for hours. She is frowning as she speaks. In the past, when I've met up with Henry, I'd tell Emily that I felt like taking a long private walk to gather my wits and enjoy the silence away from the baby. From the beginning, she insisted that she understood and never questioned me about it, her own way of proving that she was ready to forget about the past, I suppose. I think about how Emily's face looked when I promised that I wouldn't hide things from her anymore. You are sure you're going to be all right, Amanda? She had said, with tears in her eyes, after I'd finished telling her about the devil in the woods. You're certain? Yes, I had replied, about a week or so before I went on the supply run to the settlement with Pa on a whim and met Henry for the first time. I swear it, sister. The thought saddens me so much that I seriously consider telling her about the baby for just a second. I refrain, of course. Emily carelessly tosses pieces of cornmeal cake and meat strips over the various plates, then pours some coffee for Ma. I still think you're hiding something, she grumbles and makes her way to the front door of the cabin, plates of breakfast carefully lined over her forearms. I grab the last two plates and follow after her, my breath caught in my chest. Ma shuts the cabin door behind me as softly as possible and motions for me to keep my feet light as she nods to my baby sister. Hannah is still sprawled motionless on Ma and Pa's bed, but any excess vibrations could wake her in an instant. Ma takes the plates from me and nods her thanks, just as I realize what's about to happen. Sadly, the warning does not come soon enough. The burning vomit sprays from my mouth and nose before I even have a chance to turn, splattering over the plates and Ma's arms and the wooden floor of the cabin. I cry out in horror and turn to push the door back open. Amanda! Ma nearly drops the plates as she follows me to the well outside. She peels the wet, stinking sleeves of her dress down her arms. Are you falling ill, my dear? It's been too long for it to be the sickness from last winter. The last bit ends up sounding more like a paranoid confirmation to herself, and I feel wretched for stirring up the memory. We get to the rain barrel, and I splash my face with the cold water. I swish some of it around my mouth and spit into the bushes while Ma washes her arms. I'm so sorry, Ma.
I finally manage after I've finished. I take a few sips of the water and it tastes terrible, sour and rancid.
Maybe I am. I feel well enough now, though, and I'm not feverish, so please do not worry. I will be fine.
The sound of Hannah's off-key screams and yelps begin to pour from the open cabin door. Pa calls for Ma impatiently from inside. Emily emerges from the doorway with a clean dress on her arm for Ma and a rag for me. Ma dresses quickly as Hannah's cries escalate, and the circles beneath her eyes look even darker than usual. She refuses to go back inside until I assure her three more times that I feel all right.
What is happening?
Emily asks me after Ma has retreated into the cabin. I take the rag from her and wipe my face as well as the back of my neck. The breakfast plates, I say instead of answering. Is there still enough food to go around? I don't have to eat. And Joanna and Charles can share a plate without raising a concern. Emily cuts me off impatiently. But forget about the food. Sister, you're ill.
You just heard me say that I feel much better now,
I insist and take her hand.
Let it pass. I really don't believe it's anything to get concerned about.
Your behavior is what's to get concerned about, Emily snaps. You said you wouldn't hide things from me anymore. She crosses her arms over her chest. I've been sleeping with a boy you've never met, over and over, and you never even became suspicious about it. No matter how hard I try to say it, my lips remain closed.
Amanda,
Emily says again and steps closer.
You can tell me. Did it happen again? Are you starting to...
It's nothing, I said. Hannah's cries finally cease. The difference in sound is startling, and I take the opportunity to leave my sister behind so she won't have the chance to break me down.
Amanda!
Emily calls after me, but I keep walking. Pa is about to depart, to hunt some furs to sell. He doesn't ask me if I'm all right. The vomit-speckled plates are piled in the dirt next to the water trough just outside the cabin. Tiny winged bugs crawl over the shiny slime that coats the cornmeal cakes, and I plead with God in my head to let the water in my stomach stay down. When I enter the cabin, Ma is with Hannah on the rocking chair that Pa built for her as a wedding present. Everyone has finished eating already, and there is half a plate waiting for me. The smell of the meat is too atrocious for me to even consider it. The baby's head is pressed against Ma's neck while she hums an old hymn, a dwindling tune that creeps up and down the scales in a lazy sweeping motion. The vibration of it against Hannah's face puts her into a daze. The tune is an old one that I recognize from when I was a child. The baby's jaw slacks open, and she makes low, flat, hooting sounds. Thickened spittle oozes from the corner of Hannah's mouth as she stares through me and through the rest of the world. It soaks into the shoulder of Ma's dress, and I shudder at the knowledge that I wish her dead. Ma motions for Joanna and Charles to scram after the baby's eyes finally begin to roll back in her head. Her eyelids have sunk into sleepy half-moons, a sure sign that she'll be out soon. The children and I leave the cabin quietly, careful not to stomp our feet upon the hard wood of the floor panels. I set Ma's Bible in her free hand before I go, and she mouths me a silent thanks.
Are you sure you're all right, daughter?
She whispers again, but I wave her off with a small smile. Leave me alone, Ma. Nobody can help me now. As soon as I step outside and close the door, the forest begins to echo with the sound of the children's excited yells as they chase each other through the trees. Emily calls out for Charles to be careful after he slips on a patch of pine needles and nearly collides with a mossy tree stump. I tell Emily that I need to do my business and make my way around the opposite side of the cabin. When I'm sure she's stopped looking nervously after me, I loop around to an especially twisted tree trunk, once alive,
but now blackened and gnarled by a lightning bolt that nearly caused our cabin to burn down when I was 10. I lift a rogue shrub branch from its resting place at the foot of the tree. Sure enough, a peppermint-flavored candy stick is tucked beneath. Its shiny finish, perfect white and red swirls that drip down the length of the sweet, beneath twists of waxed paper, is stark and brilliant against the dark, muddy earth. A red ribbon is tied carefully around its middle. Henry is already here, waiting for me in our secret place, no doubt with a blanket strewn over the dead leaves and needles of the forest floor. My hand finds itself over my lower belly before I even realize what's happening. The very thought of telling Henry about the baby is staggering, but it's something that I know I must do if I want him to consider marrying me. "Come here, sister," Emily calls to me from the forest once I return from the dead tree, the sweet in my pocket. Her face is smiling, and her cheeks are rosy from chasing Joanna and Charles. "The children have decided that they want a new pet. We should find something furry and pleasant before they set their minds on a snake again." I slide my hand into the pockets of my shirt and wrap my fingers around the peppermint stick. I cannot risk showing up too late and having Henry be gone already. I cannot make it another fortnight. "Apologies, Emily." I make a vague gesture around my middle, then point to the trees behind me. "I think that maybe I will take a walk instead. Some fresh air, perhaps, for my stomach." The disappointment shines in her dark eyes. The corners of her mouth turn down and she crosses her arms. "Shouldn't you feel like resting after what happened this morning?" "I feel well enough," I say. "Just need to breathe, I think. Enjoy the silence." "Right." Her voice is cold. She is upset that I would rather be alone than be with her. I wish I could tell her the truth. "See you when you return then, I suppose." And she turns away. The idea that this is how it ends, this is the last conversation I will have with my sister before I run away to give birth like an animal in hiding, is more than I wish to endure. I want to hug her, promise her I'll come back for her, lie to her that everything will be well, and that I'm only going on a journey to find her a better, dearest friend. I don't, of course. Instead, I walk away from my sister, without even saying goodbye. 3. My meeting place with Henry is about a quarter mile from the cabin, and I trudge through the woods with my skirts gathered near my waist so I can move faster through the fallen branches and shrubs and tangled vines. The struggle to keep Emily's face from my mind is terrible. She is going to be so very worried about me when I fail to return. She'll likely torture herself for years with hundreds of different visions of possible ways to die during a walk in the woods, each one worse than the one before, until she's finally forced to move forward and let me go. You know she never will. Still, though, one day I'll simply turn up for her. I try to picture what her face will look like then, instead of how it did just now. It's still early enough for the lingering mist of the mountain's morning to swirl lazily around the trees and blur the edges of the world like a dream. Usually I take much more time with the walk to enjoy the peace and beauty of the mountainside and savor the excitement over seeing Henry. But right now, I can't even bring myself to consider the spicy smell of wildflowers or the scattered flurry of squirrel feet dashing across the leaves. "I am with child," I imagine myself saying to Henry. "We are to be mother and father," whatever it is that means. In my imagination, Henry rejoices at the news and promises to take care of us both. He tells me that he's been hoping this would happen. He tells me that he wants to be married immediately. He tells me that God loves all his children, no matter how they come about, even if not under his holy matrimony. I pull out half of the broken peppermint stick from my pocket and begin to suck at the end of it. The sweet mint flavor is heaven on my tongue, settling to my stomach, and also calms my nerves until I come to the clearing by the creek. When I emerge, I can see that Henry's horse, General, is tied up against a tree near the water. He drinks it up in big, loud gulps, but Henry is nowhere to be seen. The blanket that we usually lie upon is settled over the dirt in the same spot as always. The memory of us entangled on the blanket, thrusting against each other and crying out in pleasure, causes my chest to flush with warmth beneath my calico dress. With the excited feeling comes the usual guilt, the automatic force that seeps into the good feelings and stains them like ink. Filth. Selfish filth. Have I truly been ruined? Henry? I call out softly. My eyes scan the woods behind General. I've something to tell you, darling. My heart startles at the feeling of his hands suddenly around my waist from behind, pulling me back into him, and the front of his pants is already bulging. Hello, my love. He whispers into my ear with that rough, eager voice. I would be lying if I said I wasn't envious of that candy in your mouth. I need to be solemn, but the hungry manner of his speaking causes me to laugh. I cannot help it. Oh, really? I say and withdraw the candy. I spin around to face him, and now his bulge is pressed against my groin. His hands wander wildly over my backside. Want a taste, then? And he's kissing me now, deep and long with sugary bursts of peppermint. I let him, to draw him in, to make this easier on myself. I need him to want me. His hands leave my backside and find themselves groping my sore breasts with vigor. I wince at the pressure. Take this cursed dress off. He pulls away from my mouth long enough to make the demand before he starts tasting my ear, my neck, my collarbone. I cannot wait to have you today. It pleases me to hear such enthusiasm, I say in a coy tone. I push away from him and sit on the blanket. Why aren't you undressing? He asks after a moment and sinks down next to me. His hands fly to the buttons on his own trousers, but I stop him. I need to ask you something. I start sucking on the candy again to calm my scorching nerves, and this time Henry doesn't appear as excited about it. He waits without a word. Do you love me? I ask. You say it every time we're together. I just wanted to know if it is true or not. Of course it's true. He almost bursts and starts fumbling with his pants again. He lets out a sigh of relief. I thought you were going to ask me something serious. How would you feel if I told you that you are to be a father? I say it with closed eyes so that I can be spared his immediate reaction. I hear him stop messing with his trousers finally, and now his breath is quickening even more than it was when he was grabbing at me. What? He asks. His voice is pure panic, not excitement, not joy, fear. Confusion. Panic. Because you are, I finish, and I put my hand over my stomach on impulse for the 100th time that day. I am with child. I observe his face carefully. It shows no emotion at all, but at least there isn't a scowl. You are. Henry leans his elbows against his knees and runs his hands through his thick, straw-colored hair. With child? I know it's a shock, I say, and reach for his hand. I wrap my fingers around his palm, but he doesn't return with any sort of squeeze. I'm not ecstatic about it myself, exactly. But my family, they cannot find out, Henry. Not now. Not before we've been wed. Do you have any idea what my pa would think about this? What do I care about your pa? He snaps and looks at me, his expression cold. And you won't be able to hide it for long. I can't do anything about that. He doesn't mention my comment about marriage. Perhaps he didn't hear me. I think back to my fantasy about Henry's reaction, and my stomach begins to feel queasy again. The sweet mint taste that coats my throat becomes metallic. Unless, I say and hold on to the last bit of hope in my heart, unless we go away together. What? Henry cries and stands upright. Are you mad, Amanda? I cannot care for an infant. I cannot care for a wife. Maybe you don't think so now, I say and get up after him. But you could do it, Henry. I know you could. We could get married and...
And what, Amanda?
His voice is raised now. Birds are scattering around us, and he begins folding the blanket back up as if he has somewhere very important to be.
I didn't think this would happen. I didn't want this to happen.
Henry has changed into a little child looking for a place to flee, and it fills me with such anger. How dare he act as if I've done it to myself? He looks around nervously and shoves his hands into his pockets before I step forward.
You wanted it whenever your parts needed a good tugging, I accuse. You never seemed to worry about it then.
My voice is dripping with poison, bitter and panicked and over the top. Who have I become? This is helping nobody, least of all myself.
Listen, Henry, let me apologize. I thought you said you loved me.
My lip quivers, and now I'm a child just like him.
I did,
Henry says and drapes the blanket over the back of General's saddle.
But I didn't ask for this.
Please don't go.
I cry and fall to my knees. I clasp my hands as if in prayer.
Please, Henry, please, take me with you. My family cannot find out about
your baby,
he says, more to himself than me, as he looks down at my streaming face and runny nose in disgust.
It's your baby. You'll just have to find a way to tell them.
It is ours!
I bellow and get off my knees. I run up to Henry, start slapping his broad chest with my hands, and he grabs my wrists and fights me off.
Don't you do this to me, Henry! Don't you dare leave me here! I'll be disowned! They'll...
Stop it, Amanda!
You said that you loved me!
I repeat over and over, and now I feel as though I'm watching all of this from the outside instead of being in it.
Why has your heart turned in such a manner?
Listen, Henry says. I enjoyed you a lot, Amanda. You came into town with your pa that one day to use my post, and I couldn't take my eyes off you. I would have continued doing this for as long as you wanted. I would have.
He mounts General in a smooth, sweeping motion, something that used to make him look handsome and strong and dreamy to me, something that now makes him look like a coward, a deserter of war. I try to hug General's neck to keep him close, but Henry makes a small, urgent click with his tongue and leads the horse right through the creek. The cold water splashes over my ankles as they pass, but I hardly notice.
Henry!
I start to protest as he rides away, but then I hear some sort of excitement behind me, a sudden crunch of twigs and leaves too loud to have been made by a squirrel or even a raccoon. Fear sparks to life in my chest. Is it a wolf? A bear? How fitting it would be for me to get attacked and torn apart right here and now, just like I wanted my family to think happened when I ran away. Perhaps it's a reckoning for me. Or perhaps it's the creature again. With a racing heart and trembling lips, I turn to face the noise. My fists are clenched, although I don't intend to fight. I open my eyes, ready to be devoured. Oh, this is a reckoning, all right. Because it's not a wolf or a bear or the devil standing on the opposite side of the clearing, staring at me with completely wild eyes and an open mouth. It's Emily. It's Emily, and from the look on her face and the way she turns to run away from me, I can tell that she's heard and seen everything. 4. I sprint after her, calling her name, bellowing for her to stop so I can explain. She doesn't stop or even look over her shoulder as she jumps over logs and dodges trees and bushes. I try to keep up, but the tightening in my belly and the gentle sear of pain across my groin slows me before I've even made it 15 paces.
Stop!
I yell again, and when that doesn't work, I give it one last try before I collapse on my knees in the dirt. Say whatever it takes to make her stop.
Let me explain. You owe it to me.
That does it. Emily slides to a halt in the dead leaves and turns back to look at me, her delicate face twisted in fury. Before I can get up from the ground, she's in front of me.
Please!
I start, but I am cut off when Emily winds up and slaps me across the face, hard. The blow knocks me back. The side of my face is buzzing, and my ear is on fire.
I owe it to you?
Emily cries. Her hands are twitching at her side. Sweat glistens in small beads over her reddened face.
I owe you nothing. What have you done to yourself, Amanda? And how? Why?
I don't know where to begin, because I'm no longer the sister that she once knew, perhaps. What would Emily think of me to discover that I pray for the death of baby Hannah, so that Ma won't have to? None of it makes sense to me except that I feel broken and corrupt, and because of that, it was distracting and freeing to have such an intimate thing all to myself.